I'm a gonna walk and just a little talking all the day long. How long has it been since you heard an old convention song?
And now it's time to sit back and enjoy the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Broadcast.
Hope and Chris finish the last episode of Star Wars The Clone Wars. Luckily, dependable Dave Filoni and crew create Rebels with new characters, new places, and new adventures, thus keeping hope alive for this podcast. Welcome to J-Guys and Jedi.
Hi, you guys. It's Hope. As you can see, we're not doing Rebels at the moment. This is actually a very special panel. I was lucky to be a part of the animation panel at Dragon Con, where we talked about Star Wars animation, mostly Clone Wars, Rebels, and Resistance. We touched a little bit on Galaxy of Avengers and Forces of Destiny, but not really much. We mostly focused on the Filoniverse stuff. You might be able to hear it in my voice. I'm on the tail end of con crud, so we decided just to go ahead and give you the panel this week, just so I can recover my voice. And I was super happy to be on this panel because I was on it with two podcasters I listen to and I look up to, which is Caitlin and Charlotte from Sky Talkers. I was also on it with John Lang, who is One John Jedi on Twitter. Melissa Pye, who I love. I saw her last year at Dragon Con. She's so funny. I love her to death. She is a 501st member where she cosplays Captain Rex. And I was also on it with Logan McGall. He is an artist on Instagram, and I'm going to have links to everybody's stuff in the show notes, so you can check it out there. And Logan's just precious. He was the youngest person on the panel. He was just so excited about animation in general. And I just love hearing from the younger generation who is carrying the torch of this animation. So I hope you guys really enjoy it. I do want to say thank you so much to Thomas Harper for the photos that we used for the episode artwork. I just forgot to tell my friend to take a picture of all of us. She just took pictures of me, and I was like, that's not helpful. And so Thomas, I reached out to Thomas, and he was super grateful just to, like super gracious to let us use the photos for that episode artwork. Also, special thanks to John Lang, who sent me the audio from the panel. And I believe it was Tashi Station Podcast who was the one that recorded the audio in the first place. So special thank you to all of you guys. I absolutely have a broken portable audio recorder, so I wasn't able to record the panel myself. And last but certainly not least, thank you, Brandy, and everybody who works on the Star Wars track at Dragon Con. Your hard work makes it happen. You guys brought this panel back for us. I'm so happy that you allowed me to be on it. And you guys are just so nice. I love you so much. Thank you so much for all your hard work. So with that all said, please enjoy the animation panel from Dragon Con. And just little housekeeping notes. Next week, we're going to be talking about all the panels I went to at Dragon Con and just talking about Dragon Con as a whole. And the week after that, we're going to return to Rebels content, where I believe it's the episode, The Forgotten Droid, the Chopper and AP5 episode. So yeah, that'll be in 2 weeks. All right, you guys, see you next time. Bye.
I was very good. It's 11:30.
All right.
Here are the Saturday-only people here today. Here
to
living it up for one day. All right. Welcome. We hope you have fun. You are in the Star Wars track, in case you couldn't figure that out. I'm Paula. I'm one of the volunteers here with Bob, who's somewhere around here. We have an amazing panel. We have some morning announcements, like we always do every day. Today is the last day to vote for the Dragon Awards. Get online, put in your votes, or forever be sad at who wins, because yours didn't. I announced this earlier. We want to play play chess with Jawa. He actually plays chess as a Jawa. People love to try to go beat him. They take donations for our charity. He's trying to beat last year. He made $2,000 last year. He's at 893 after a day and a half, so he really needs help getting up and beating his last year's goal. We have challenge coins, which Bob just tried to sell. They're $20 each. Go straight to our charity. One side has Jar Jar on it. The other has our track logo on it. They're so amazingly collectible. You will love them. And Dragon Con, remember, matches every charity dollar, so make them go broke. please don't forget, rate us in the app. It really, you guys don't think we read it, we do. We sit and read them, it tells us what you want the next year, and this is why the programming changes. Please don't forget, we have a Peter Mayhew memorial panel coming up. We'd really love as many people there as we can. His family is going to be there, so we really want to show them some support. So please don't forget. So, and as well, there will be discussions of storylines here. If you have not seen all the cartoons, you are hereby warned. Okay, with that, I will leave you to our very smart panelists and let them take it away.
She calls us smart,
I don't know why I'm clapping for myself.
You have time for the other panelists.
Self high fives. Do this. Hi, guys.
Good morning. Well, good morning, everyone. Welcome to the Star Wars animation panel. We are all really excited to be here, and you'll have to bear with me. This is my first time moderating a panel, so there were some technical difficulties, but we're all here, and we're all ready to talk about Star Wars animation. Obviously, all of us here are really passionate about these stories. They mean a lot to all of us here, and I'm sure all of you are really excited to talk about them, too. And so today we're going to be talking about the past, present, and future of the animation department at Lucasfilm. So before we get started, we are just going to go ahead and introduce all of our panelists here today. So if we just want to go down the line and say your name and your outlet or your Twitter handle if you'd like.
Hello, I am Hope Molinax. I'm one of the co-hosts of Jay Guys and Jedi podcast. We are a not safe for work podcast, so sorry kids, where we have adult conversations about animation. Our main focus is what we call the Filoniverse. So we've already done all of Clone Wars. We're halfway through Rebels right now. We plan to do Resistance, Season 7 of Clone Wars, and whatever it is. But we mostly focus on the Filoniverse because the animation is very different from the rest of the canon. It's very unique. So.
Good morning. My name is Melissa. I am not on a podcast. I am a costuming member of several of the Star Wars costume groups, but my particular favorite is Captain Rex. So oftentimes, folks in Atlanta get to see me wandering around as Captain Rex at various events. And with that said, Clone Wars is my field of specialty, and I really enjoyed Rebels as well. I'm looking forward to the spoilers in today's panel. I haven't been able to see Resistance yet.
My name is Logan McGaw, and I am currently a junior in Altoona High School still. I'm not a part of the 501st, not a podcaster, YouTuber, or anything like that. I just enjoy drawing. I draw Star Wars a lot. My Instagram page is on there where I post my artwork.
He's really good.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
I follow him.
Yes.
Clone Wars was my introduction to the world of Star Wars. I've watched that show so many times. I've watched Rebels, and I've watched Resistance as well.
I'm Charlotte Airdy, and I am a co-host on the Sky Talkers podcast, and Caitlin, who's the moderator, and I are both on the same podcast, and we love the animation department. Our slogan really is, look to the animation department for the future of Star Wars. And we have episodes all about Resistance, we follow Rebels, we talk a lot about animation. So we're really excited to both be here today.
Hi, I'm John Liang. I'm a contributor to the Beltway Bantha's Star Wars and Politics podcast. I've also written for RitualZap.com about basically doing a lot of book reviews. I'm really big on the books as well as the animation. And I think I may be the resident old fart on this panel. Because I saw Star Wars in the theater in 1977 at 8 years old.
I wasn't in America yet.
Okay, I saw it in Panama.
I was in Germany.
Oh, cool, okay.
Okay, well, those are our panelists, and like Charlotte said, my name is Caitlin, and I'm the other co-host of Sky Talkers podcast, and we all love animation. So before we get started, okay, I have a cute picture of a loth cat that says spoilers, but we already covered that. So there will be spoilers for all of our animated shows, so Clone Wars, Rebels, and Resistance, and all of that. So we already did a warning, but there's another warning for you. I will move that. Thank you. So, first I'm just going to give a little background on some of our past shows. So we have Clone Wars, which premiered in 2008 in theaters. It officially changed the landscape of Star Wars. It went on to be nominated for 16 Daytime Emmy Awards. And as Logan mentioned, it introduced him to Star Wars and a whole other generation of people to Star Wars and brought in a whole new era of fans. So we're going to talk about the original run of Clone Wars here, and then we'll save Season 7 discussion for the end of the panel. And then we had Rebels, which has, of course, finished. And it ran from 2014 to 2018. It was the first project underneath the new Disney era, as I'm sure you're all aware of. And it introduced characters like Kanan, Hera, Zeb, Ezra, Sabine, and one of my personal favorites, Chopper. It was nominated for 4 Daytime Emmys and a lot of other awards as well during its 75-episode run. And it took place between Revenge of the Sith and A New Hope. Okay, so our first question is, Lucasfilm has been developing these stories for well over a decade now. What is it about these shows that keeps us coming back to these stories?
I'm happy to start. I feel like animation to me is such a celebration of the weird. It is always exploring new things that I feel like the films haven't really gotten into. I felt that way about Clone Wars, especially with things like the Mortis arc and everything. I think that, you know, those are stories that George Lucas really wanted to tell, and he didn't really get to them in the films, but they add so much to how we think about the Force and how we think about, when we watch the movies now, we're so filled with all this extra information.
They also, for me, helped reconcile myself to the prequels. I actually like them a lot more after having watched the Clone, specifically the Clone Wars. You see a lot of the backstory that when you go back and watch the prequels, you go, oh, okay, that may be stuff that George just couldn't put into the prequels because of time or whatever, but now you've got all that backstory that you can go, okay, I get it now, that's great.
That really is a big thing for me as well. I love television. Like, yeah, movies are fine, but I love television because you have more time to make these stories, have deeper characters, and have these bigger story arcs, and that's what I love about the animation department. Like, I feel like you have Kanan for 4 seasons, and it's a very, very deep story opposed to somebody that you see, like, in a show, or, like, going deeper with Mace Windu, or all these characters that we love for the movies, and you can actually develop their stories deeper. And you guys said it right. Animation is the future of Star Wars. We're seeing these storylines starting to come into the main movies now, and it's because of the experimentation they did back, starting with Clone Wars.
With me, it's definitely, like, the characters. Like, as I said before, like, Clone Wars was my introduction to Star Wars, so many people who disliked the prequels and stuff like that, I didn't understand why, because now that I'm older, I understand, like, I got to grow up watching characters like Anakin and Obi-Wan develop and watch them gain these bonds, and then I also grew up with, like, characters like Ahsoka and Rex, who's my favorite character, and we get to see these characters, each of them grow in their own ways, develop. We cheer when they cheer. We cry when they cry. We're angry when they're angry. And we just get, like, these amazing moments with, like, their designs, like, help, like, influence, like, their characters. Like, immediately, like, if you look between, like, Rex, Echo, and Fives, my friends, they always say, like, they're able to tell them apart because they always say, where's the handprint? Because they know, like, Echo's signature thing is the handprint. And, like, where's the J guys? They know Rex's signature thing is the J guys. So stuff about, like, the animation, the story, and how everything just ties together just helps it all fit.
I enjoy the fact that with all the animations, they have a better ability to world build. In the movies, you're limited to the time span that the movie's going to run, and you don't get to see the background characters, you know. John and Tina, who work at the cantina, you know, you don't get to see what does the cantina look like, what are the lower levels of Coruscant look like, what are all of these other worlds that are mentioned in various things that you may see a glimpse or two in a comic panel, but you get to see a 30-minute episode where it's a whole new world, a whole new culture. Just all of the research that goes into building that type of thing is one of the reasons why I do enjoy the animation and the fact that it's the world-building experience.
Can I say one more thing? Like, going back to the fact that animation is the future of Star Wars, can I have, like, the kids in the audience raise their hands? Like, anyone who's, like, under 18? You guys are the future of Star Wars, too. And it's so important that you guys have an outlet to get you into the genre. Because all of us, like, old bodies and stuff, we love you, but, like, you guys will be passing the torch to the next generation after you. And that's why animation is also important. So you guys have a place in the fandom, too. Yeah. I see your hand.
Oh. I actually started on the movies.
That's okay.
Yeah. That's okay.
That's cool.
You're allowed.
It's for everyone.
I started on the movies, too, but I love the animation more. You're allowed.
That's one of the great things about Star Wars now and with all of these animated shows is that there are so many entry points into Star Wars. You don't have to start with A New Hope to be a Star Wars fan. You can start with Clone Wars. You can start with The Phantom Menace. You can start with a book. Or I met someone a couple weeks ago who their entry point to Star Wars was Star Tours, and that's how they discovered Star Wars. And one thing that I love about animation we've kind of touched on already is just the breadth of the stories that we get to tell and how a lot of the times the movies are giving us like very big picture of what's going on. And then in animation and with these longer form stories, you really get a chance to dive in deep and see the details of how all these politics and characters were moving into place in order to get where we are in some of the films. And they really just work so well together. So with Clone Wars and with Rebels, we had a lot of time with those characters. What are some of the stories and story arcs that you guys find yourself returning back to the most?
I can do it. For me, the story arc that really represents, you know, okay.
Don't steal my arc.
I'm watching that arc, and of course, it's the one that comes out on Netflix. So, okay, it's Friday night when it first comes out. I'm home after work, get myself a glass of wine, start watching the arc. By the third episode, like the first 10 minutes of the third episode, I'm realizing, oh crap, they're going there. Okay, do I have enough wine? I go in the kitchen. No, I don't. I press pause, run up to the Quickie Mart, get myself a nice big honking bottle of wine, come back, and restart watching that thing because I thought that was one of the best arcs, most well done. Good soldier, kills me. It's great.
For me, it's definitely the Umbara arc because we can all enjoy it. We can all enjoy it. Don't worry.
You're stealing my lines from last year, aren't you?
So, with the Umbara arc, most people just praise that arc just for the fact of, oh, it's the clones, it's the 501st, we get to see 4 episodes about them, they shoot things, yay. But for me, like, rewatching it so many times, I've noticing, like, how much character development the soldiers of Turret Company got, like, especially Captain Rex, because, like, lots of people like don't like really see it, but throughout the course of the show and into Rebels, you watch Rex like mellow out and start to become more individualistic. And so with the Umbara arc, he kind of learned like, hey, I'm a soldier, I'm still gonna be a good soldier, but like good soldiers follow orders, but like great soldiers know when orders are wrong. So like we got to see like Fives kind of like help him through that as well, and Jesse, we got some amazing action scenes, and I'm probably not the and my favorite scene of all time in all of Star Wars is Rex's mutiny on Krell and watching Rex and all the clones in that lighting just march up to the Citadel, like the tower, and we just get this amazing scene of just pretty much watching the clones show we're not droids, we're individualistic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they both took my arcs.
Why do you like them?
Yeah.
When you watch the first 3 movies, the Phantom, the Menace arc, you have the clones as sort of a background. They show up in a movie 2, they're kind of a background filler, a mysterious sort of menace. And when the Clone Wars cartoon started, of course you have your hero characters. You've got Anakin, you've got Obi-Wan Kenobi, you've got Ahsoka, and then you start having clones that have names. And one of the reasons that Umbara arc spoke to me so much is that was the point where, while yes, they had their individual colorizations and patterns on their kits, you begin to sympathize with them. Mm-hmm. They're stuck. They've been conditioned and trained and brainwashed to follow all of these rules. And at that moment, the one thing they've been told would always be a constant in their life and always be the right choice was irrevocably broken. And you got to watch that crushing sense to them, and that's when they became real. They weren't just filler animation in the background. They weren't just, you know, additional add-ons to the thing. It actually became the Clone Wars. And then when going back to watch when old Obi-Wan Kenobi mentioned that he remembered the Clone Wars, it ties into how much, you know, memory actually was there. It wasn't just a passing thing. There were millions of these guys that they didn't know any better. And at that point in Umbara, you see how much it hurt them to realize that the one thing they were able to trust, they couldn't anymore.
They are like the Vietnam
veterans. Yes, yeah. They were the Vietnam veterans.
Of Star Wars.
My second favorite, and I can't remember the episode, it's where C-3PO is stuck with Commander Wolf.
Sassy Commander Wolf in his eye rolls.
Yes, Commander Wolf eye rolls. Like, I've got them on. I just... it's just like...
I have so many of those gifts.
Oh my God, that is the best thing ever is watching Commander Wolf just go into eye rolls. I'm like, it's going to fall out of his head.
I'm going to need you to send that gift to me.
Yeah, that's a fantastic one.
Who wants to go?
I'll go.
Yeah.
My favorite, it's a couple, but that I always actually come back to legitimately all the time are three, and I think they all kind of go together. World Between Worlds from Rebels, mm-hmm. and then going even further back, the Mortis trilogy. And I already mentioned that in this panel. Oops. And then also the Yoda arc from The Lost Missions, which are all, you know, intrinsically linked and deal with the Force in the weirdest way, but are constantly being brought up even in today's Star Wars and the films. And I feel like I can return to those arcs so many times and get something new out of it each time. And it's so weird. It's so confusing. Yeah. It's so confounding. And I love it for what... you know, each of these shows did to, you know, push the boundaries, I guess.
Yeah, one of the cool things about the Mortis arc is that when you get the DVD, on the DVD it actually had, like, it was one of the extras, like an extra on the Mortis arc. It's like, I'm going, okay, cool. You press play, and Filoni comes on saying, yeah, we're not really going to talk about this. Click, and that's it. It's going to be 15 seconds, and it's like, whoa, come on! Seriously?
At Star Wars Celebration this year, I don't know if anyone was there, and they went to the Rebels Remembered panel, and he had a World Between Worlds picture in the back that like kind of illustrated World Between Worlds, but it was all blurred out. And the whole thing, and he started the panel like, we're going to talk about anything, because like the show's over, and we can talk about anything, but it was all blurred out. Filoni being Filoni. Yeah.
Well, for me, it's the characters. The most controversial thing you'll hear in this panel, the original trilogy is my least favorite part of Star Wars. I know, right? Well, that's because, like, when I was little, like, characters like Leia and Padme, they were both these, like, really amazing women. And they were so cool and they were so brilliant that somebody who deals with a lot of, like, anxiety and, like, depression and stuff like that, I didn't see myself being as cool as them. And I had a hard time connecting with these women. And then my Clone Wars came, and my lovely Ahsoka Tano came along, and she was flawed. She was so flawed. She made mistakes. She struggles. Ahsoka Tano totally has PTSD. Like, she struggled. And it was the first time I saw myself in Star Wars, because this character wasn't perfect. The characters of Clone Wars are not perfect. I also love Cad Bane until the end of the Earth. I want him back. But, like, yeah, I come back for these characters to see people like Rex struggling and seeing characters just struggle and not being these, like, great heroes that, like, I fail to strive to be because I'm not that person. I'm a normal person who struggles, and I'm flawed just like these people. Kanan's a flawed character. Ezra's a flawed character. And I like that. That's why Kanan's my favorite Jedi, because he doesn't believe in himself as a teacher. He doesn't believe in himself as a Jedi, and he has to learn how to do that. And those are examples that we should be teaching people that you don't have to be perfect to be a hero. You can be just as flawed and have PTSD and have these crazy things just like Ahsoka Tano, but you too can go off and be Gandalf the White at the end, and you can work towards it.
Kind of going on the Ahsoka Tano train, one of my favorite arcs that I always go back to is the Ahsoka Leaves arc at the end of season 5 of Clone Wars. And for me, that was so important because my Star Wars story is I watched Star Wars for the first time in fall 2005, so right after Revenge of the Sith had been out. And so I already knew how everything ended. There were no surprises for me. And so when Ahsoka came along, she was the first Star Wars character that I was like, I don't know what happens. And for me, that was such a fun ride to follow her journey from, well, what we thought was the end, and thankfully it was not, and to be able to see the culmination of all of her work and, like, what is going to happen when we get to Revenge of the Sith timeline, like, where is she? And to see that arc kind of come to fruition was really satisfying as a fan, and of course then to get to track with her more into Rebels and beyond.
That's what made me watch Rebels, was I found out Ahsoka was in it. I was like, oh, I have to watch this now. Okay, we're in.
Like, something that, like, to add on with, like, the whole thing with you saying, like, Ahsoka, like, messes up. Like, there are some moments where Ahsoka, like, messes up big time. Like, in season 1, she literally ends up getting over half of her fighter squadron killed. Like, she's responsible for getting several of her good friends killed, and that is something like if you just, like, look at it, it's like, it's just extras, they're dead, okay, move on. But this is, like, early on in the war. Ahsoka's, like, 13 at this point. She just got thrusted into this war, and now has to live with the fact that she's responsible for getting almost her entire squad killed. That is something that, like, many people today just can't process.
The Jedi Order is a cult. Pass it on.
Yeah, shout out to Kevin Kiner for the music.
Because, yeah.
If you remember, like, at the end of season 5, during the after Ahsoka leaves, during the credits, there is, like, an oboe. It's a solo. Da da da. At the end of the season 2 finale of Rebels, those last 2 minutes, it's that same music with an orchestra, and it is literally the best piece of Star Wars music. Period. I could watch that forever.
Put it on Spotify.
It's so great. I think that that's a funny story, though, about Dave, where he didn't want the whole, you know, at the end of it, he wanted to be super somber when the credits rolled, and it was perfect. Oh, my God, who else was crying?
Yeah.
Okay, so we're going to skip a little bit ahead to start talking about the presence of the Star Wars Animation Department so that we have time for questions at the end. So, Resistance. How many of you have watched Resistance?
Yes!
Yes.
We about to spoil it for you.
Yeah.
Heads up.
Spoilers.
Here we go.
If you have not watched Resistance, like she said, these are spoilers, but also you should watch Resistance. It's so good. So Star Wars Resistance premiered last October, and it would go on to be nominated for an Emmy itself in its first season. And it takes place on the ship The Colossus and is set during the sequel trilogy era and features overlapping timelines with The Force Awakens and The Last Jedi, which is one of my personal favorite things about it. And we have a whole new set of characters, just like Rebels, with Kaz, Tora, Tam, Niku, and Yeager, and a lot of others as well. So season 2 is unfortunately going to be Resistance's last season. We found out a couple weeks ago when we saw the trailer for season 2, which looks amazing. So we can all take a moment to just be sad about that, because I know I am. And this was the poster that was revealed at Star Wars Celebration. And so the end of season 1 of Resistance saw Tam joining the First Order, and Kaz trying to stop her, but she eventually goes on to join the First Order away from her friend group. So what do we think is it going to take for Tam to come back to the Colossus at the end of season 2?
Can I segue and pitch Resistance first?
Yeah, please.
Hi, fam. So for... I was going to be so cool. I've discovered that. So I want to talk to you about Resistance just for a second, for the people who haven't watched it. And it is a very uniquely different show from the previous two. And the reason it is so unique is, unlike the previous two where they were more plot-driven, it's more character-driven. So it's a little bit slower. It takes a little bit more time to get into. But where Resistance is brilliant is it's something that I've been calling blue-collared Star Wars. And it's not about the Skywalkers. It's not about these Force users. There's really no Force at all. It's about normal, everyday people and about how these big themes of these movies, these wars of the movies, affect everyday people. Like, how does these wars affect a cantina owner, a janitor? There's a janitor that this war is just like, oh, this is my life now. I'm disrupted by the First Order. Oh, God. And it's like, and it's about us. It's about us people. And how would we feel if the First Order came to our workplace, our homes, and told us what to do? That's what Resistance is about. It took me a long time to get into it and to really understand the concept, but it's brilliant. We're just seeing it through Kaz's eyes because Kaz is a Resistance spy. But we see how kind these wars. Yeah, he tries. He tries. Gold star. He tries. So, like, definitely Resistance tries. Is amazing. Please give it a try because it's very, very different. It's the most unique Star Wars I've ever seen because it's nothing like anything else. And I mean that as the story is very different. Okay, I'm done. That's my TED Talk. Thanks for coming.
So, in regards to what it would take for Tam to come back, personally, I don't want her to come back. I think it's going to be a lot more impactful if Tam stays with the First Order. Because, like, you gotta look at it from her eyes. Like, she's, like, Yeager's done, like, from her eyes, Yeager's done nothing but hold her back. She doesn't see it as Yeager protecting her and stuff like that. She just sees it as Yeager keeping the truth from her. And then Kaz shows up, she starts trusting him, and boom, he's a Resistance spy. And we already know she's been through some stuff with Hype Faison and feels betrayed by that, so... But then the First Order comes along, and they're not showing any sign that they're gonna, like, betray her or do anything like that, so she has the mindset of, like, oh, all my friends betrayed me. I'm gonna stay with the I'm gonna go with the First Order. And personally, what I want to see happen is, like, yeah, Tam stay with the First Order. Like, don't go back to the Resistance, and I want there to be, like, that confrontation between her and Yeager. And I love Yeager, but in this confrontation I kind of want him to die. I love Yeager, but I feel like
before we started you were like, man, it would have been great if the Ghost Crew just died.
Yeah. Not the entire crew, I'm just saying it would have been more impactful in my opinion.
Logan,
you're the baby of the panel, stop.
I'm talking about the serious stuff.
Oh, somebody has to.
I mean, I can go into, like, how fascism is portrayed in Resistance if we really want to. And
oh,
the
boy.
Radicalization of our youth. That's what we talk about on our podcast.
I talk about stuff that's a little more...
I can do that.
I talk about stuff that's deeper, not politics. Politics are not my forte.
I feel like Tam has given... I think that something that's so brilliant about Resistance is that we empathize with Tam in her decision. We totally know where she's coming from, and I think that that's something we have seen sort of in Star Wars, but definitely not to this degree, in that we're like, wow, you know what, that makes sense. But at the same time, we know these characters, we know Yeager, we know Kaz, we know that they care about Tam so much. That moment where she leaves and joins the First Order was so emotional, and for me, I want her to come back, but I also kind of want her to be someone on the inside who helps the Resistance. And my biggest hope is that now that it's only two seasons, that we have this satisfying conclusion to her arc, because for me, it's the most fascinating thing about Resistance.
Also, not just that, the First Order did an incredibly good job of psychological warfare for her to get her to make that decision. Just yeah, it wasn't you need to do this, it was no, what about this, what I just like any kind of recruiter would do for any cause. Mm-hmm. So whether you just flip that coin, you know, what's her name, the recruiter,
Agent Tierney.
Tierney, yeah, I mean, she could be a rebel. I mean, just change the wording, it's basically you recruiting someone. She just happened to be recruiting for the First Order, and they did a masterful job of showing how people can decide to make a choice of joining something that is, you know, basically in the background, fascist.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that's what I've been arguing with people this entire time about Resistance, is that, like, out of the three shows, if you took Resistance and put it in our modern day society, it's the one that has the most something to say. It has something to say about the rise of fascist regimes in our world. It has something to say about the radicalization of our youth, like Tam. It has something to say about people with monetary privilege. Kaz is a very different protagonist. He comes from wealth. He's a senator's son. He has to learn how to check his privilege. And so, like, it's the most show, it's out of the three, it's the show that has the most to say about our society. It's just so subtle doing it. You have to, like, think about it.
It's definitely the most relatable. Like you said, Kaz, coming from a family of privilege, learning how to exist in a new world. One of the things I love about Resistance is the way that it's constantly referencing things that have come before it. I mean, even Tam, when we're kind of seeing her thinking about joining the First Order, and Kaz is talking to her about how horrible the Empire was, and Tam is like, well, I had a grandfather who worked in the Empire, and like, he just needed to put food on the table. And like, that's something that I think is really reflective of a lot of the choices that sometimes get and be made in our world too, and you just don't know everyone's story. And I think it was really easy for Kaz to be like, the Empire was bad and, you know, the rebellion was good, and Tam is like, well, I have a completely different perspective of that. Do you think I'm a bad person now? And I think it makes people, it causes our characters and I think ourselves too to be really reflective of that.
She reminds me a lot of Sienna Reeve from Lost Stars.
Exactly. That story feels very related, similar to this one.
Well, what do you think about Tam?
I love Tam. I loved how they routinely kind of isolated her throughout season one. I thought that was a really, as a fan of her character, I was like, oh, I miss Tam. But then it makes sense for the decision that she makes at the end of the season. And for one, I thought it was a really bold statement to actually have her get up onto the First Order's ship and leave everyone. Like Charlotte mentioned, that scene is just so emotionally charged. I really hope that she comes back because I think it'd be great to see, to have a character who made what I think some people might call the wrong choice or maybe not the best choice at the end of season one, and eventually find her way back to the people who actually care about her and love her and will forgive her for the choices that she made and welcome her back with open arms, just like hopefully she will forgive them for the lies that they told to her too.
And then eat spaghetti.
Yes. On our show, on Skytalkers, we have a joke that Resistance is like a pot of boiling water, because we're just getting closer and closer and closer to the rise of Skywalker, and tensions are rising like a pot of boiling water. So we make a joke about that a lot on our show.
It's actually a really great metaphor.
It does. It takes a long time to explain, though. Mm-hmm. So we are going to speed right along to the future of Star Wars animation with Clone Wars Season 7.
Yes!
Which at D23 we finally got a date when it was coming back. Not an exact date, but a month. I'll take it. February 2020, Season 7 of the Clone Wars is going to be coming back to Disney Plus. Very excited. And I think Dave Filoni said it's going to be 12 episodes, presumably the last season. He's definitely indicated that there's not going to be any more. So what is one crazy wish that we all have for these last 12 episodes of The Clone Wars?
Start down there and work down.
I really want them to bump right up against Revenge of the Sith and just kind of fill out the timeline completely. I think they will, but that's kind of my huge hope.
Yeah, I'm actually looking forward to seeing how they do the Battle of Mandalore. Just because 2 years ago in London Celebration, there's actually a video you can watch on YouTube. Filoni described what would actually happen, and Ashley Eckstein was there, and he basically made her cry.
Oh,
she just like started bawling because he described what she gets to see. So I actually want to see how they flesh that out and do that.
Mm-hmm. Execute Order 66. I will leave it at that.
That final actual sense of finality where, because when it ended, it just didn't feel finished. Mm-hmm. So there were several loose ends floating around and various storylines that were never concluded. Where did Ahsoka end up? So we do know that she, there's the Siege of Mandalore, and some of us, probably everybody has seen those little snippets where there's the clones with the Ahsoka markings on their kits. That's something I want to see. I want, what happened to the three clones? How did they end up over, hunting the giant sand slugs? How did they get there? What was the end of their story before that happened?
Captain Rex worked in the Empire. I want to know more about that. But
Did he?
Yeah, he says so in Rebels. Yeah. So my one crazy thing that I want to see, because it's such a unique opportunity where you had the first show, Clone Wars, and then you went back to Rebels, and they finished Rebels, and now we're going back to Clone Wars. I want to see Caleb Doom. I want to see young Kanan.
Oh my god, that would be so
like,
cool.
Even if it's just like a quick shot of him like in the background with Deppa, or like even if they do like an Order 66 scene and we get the Kanan the Last Padawan moment where it's like, run Padawan. I want to see young Kanan because we have that opportunity to put him from Rebels back into Clone Wars now. I think that'd be really cool.
Yeah, I think I'm going to take that one. That sounds really good to me.
Yes! I changed my answer. I mean, right?
So yeah.
I win the panel.
Rex never served with the Empire. He defected when Order 66 happened. Wolf did.
He says in Rebels multiple times, like, me and Cody wrote all these codes together. And
yeah, they wrote them for the Republic. The Empire just used them.
It's not stated that way.
That's how I was interpreted. I know Wolf executed Order 66.
My interpretation is that Rex had to, like, try to survive because, you know, all his brothers were there, too. I was under the impression that Rex worked for the Empire and then eventually left.
I think the Ahsoka novel said that, like, he
It just said that he helped stage their deaths.
Yeah,
well, we can address the canon afterwards too.
Yeah,
next year.
One of the random things I'm really looking forward to. One, I love. I love the relationship between Anakin and Ahsoka. So I really hope that they get time to be sad together and talk about the choice that Ahsoka made. I think that's really important for Anakin's, I'd say development, but his journey further into the dark side and Revenge of the Sith. One of the random things I'm really looking forward to for season 7 is the fact that Ray Park was motion captured for Darth Maul to be animated, which like what other show is doing it like Clone Wars, guys?
Darth Maul.
Your fave could never.
Yeah, Maul and Beck's like, yeah.
Yeah. When they revealed that at Star Wars Celebration, I was like, this is amazing. Literally no other show is doing it like Clone Wars.
Yeah, that little snippet that they showed is incredible already.
It's so fluid. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's amazing.
I love Ahsoka with blue lightsabers.
I love it all.
The green's iconic, but the blue looks so satisfying.
So moving into future projects, obviously Resistance is ending. We do have season 7 of Clone Wars, so coming down the line, but eventually that will end too. If you could pitch one thing to the Lucasfilm Story Group for an animated show, movie, storyline, what would it be?
Well, why don't we start with you? Like, you have not started yet.
I will start. like Charlotte mentioned, we are really big fans of the Mortis trilogy. I love Mortis. I love when the Force gets weird. So one thing I would love to see Star Wars do is do an animated, like really stylized, almost like Miyazaki style film, animated film about the Mortis gods and really exploring that mythology more. I think it could get really trippy, really weird. I think it would look beautiful. That's what I want.
Well, for me, like, I'm so excited about, like, post-Tross because I feel like we're about to go into, like, the wild years of Doctor Who when the show ended and we didn't have anything until the new show came back. And I'm just looking forward toward just, like, anything new. I don't care if it's Old Republic. I don't care if it's, like, 50 years in the future after Tross. I just want to see, like, brand new Star Wars we've never seen before and make it weird. I love weird Star Wars, man. Weird Star Wars is the best. So that's what I want.
I'd just be happy to have anything.
Yeah.
Because those dark years of of Doctor Who, it was pretty empty.
In all honesty, I'd really enjoy to see a series about Kix and like the Crimson Corsair and Sidon Ithano. I think that'd be an amazing story.
He's probably going to be in Resistance because the Crimson Corsair is going to be in
Resistance. And like you got Super Battle Droids coming up. Like, I would just like love to see Kix and how he's coping with the fact that he got like ripped from his own time. Like, everybody he knows, besides R2 and C-3PO, are presumed to be dead. Long dead. So I'd love to see like how he like deals with that and like what kind of like PTSD he has from like not being able to successfully save the Jedi and save his brothers.
I am desperate for a Luke and Ben Solo training show. I just need an exploration into that era. I am a huge Kylo Ren fan, so this is like no surprise to people who know me, and I just like that feels like it needs to be filled in, and they're not going to touch that until The Rise of Skywalker is over, and it feels like there's a lot there that we can explore.
I wouldn't mind Han Solo going around after like pre-TFA, but after Return of the Jedi, like after they've had Ben, and he's just going around with Chewie, just hanging out and seeing what he does with that. And as an adult cartoon, because that's most of the cartoons are for kids. Of course, they should, as they should be. I would still love to see like some sort of adult-oriented cartoon, anime style, that kind of thing.
I'm actually really surprised because I thought somebody on the panel was going to say Thrawn, Ezra, Sabine, and Ahsoka. And oh. That's why I didn't choose that as my choice.
That needs to be a movie all on its
like
own.
A shoe-in.
That needs to be a movie all on its own.
I just didn't choose it. I thought someone would say it.
It needs to happen.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's kind of like a blanket statement at this point, right?
Yeah.
So we did mention The Rise of Skywalker is coming up very, very shortly. What is something from animation that you hope gets represented in The Rise of Skywalker? Oh. A storyline, a character, a ship, anything that you
Ahsoka.
Really... Ahsoka?
Definitely Ahsoka or anyone from the Clone Wars. Like, Kix, it would make sense. Find some random excuse for how Rex could still be alive. I don't care what you do, I will accept it as long as he's alive.
Yeah. And this is kind of inspired by a friend of mine in the back corner of the room. I'd like to see more Hondo.
Ooh, yes.
Who happens to be standing in the back of the room right now.
Hondo Onaka.
Yes, I'd like to see him and his little crew. I kind of would think that would be an interesting animation, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I wouldn't mind Vi Moratti.
Oh, yeah.
You know, just her being a spy, maybe pre-Phasma, having fun doing whatever she wants to do.
Yeah. Both those Hondo and Vi aren't exactly, you know, wild guesses because right. they are represented in Star Wars Galaxy's Edge at Disneyland and Disney World. Mm-hmm. And that's
How
canon.
How was that, by the way?
It's great.
Okay.
I feel like I have a small wish. I honestly feel like I've been talking about Mortis a lot up here, sorry. But I feel like the symbols of dark and light in Mortis could come up in The Rise of Skywalker, and it feels like it could happen, and I would kind of freak out if I saw those.
Who would freak out if, like, World Between Worlds came
out? Oh my God.
Yeah. There's so many World Between Worlds.
I was telling people about how I want the final battle to... between Rey and Kylo Ren to be in the World Between Worlds.
I want that so like bad. That.
Like you just like hear like all like the quotes and stuff like that, and just like see like this massive like light show as those sabers clash and like this massive force energy.
Amazing. From your lips to JJ's ears. I think it is. That's the thing.
It's possible.
All right. So now, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, you didn't say yours either.
A world between worlds.
No, it's fine. It's no big deal. Go on. We're running short on time.
All right. So now we're going to open up for Q&A. If you have a question, you can come to the center of the room. It can be about
If you can't come
anything.
To the center of the room, please raise your hand.
Mm-hmm. No questions? Come on, guys.
Wow. We can just keep talking about Star Wars then.
Svara, welcome.
Hey, Caitlin. Hey, Charlotte. Great to see you guys.
What's up, Steve?
So Star Wars has a long tradition of technical monsters. Do you think we're getting another one in Rise of Skywalker?
I sure do.
I feel like
so.
We might. Just yeah. because
Why not?
It's yeah. in every single movie. Yeah. Even as in The Last Jedi, it was like teased in the corner on Octo, yeah. which felt like an in joke.
Yeah.
I don't know. Nothing. None of that surprises me anymore.
Just get a new breed of a Sarlacc.
Probably. Thank you, guys.
Thanks, Sara.
So one of my personal favorite things about all of the animation, this is going to be a question for the group, is the way in which it makes you watch films differently after you see something. What is an arc, a character, an event in, it could be any of the series, that causes you or caused you to go back and watch a particular film or scene a different way?
I know for me personally, Order 66 was completely different after The Clone Wars. When I first saw Revenge of the Sith, I was like, okay, great. Like, that's really sad. I don't really know those people very well. And then I watched Clone Wars, and the first time I watched Revenge of the Sith, after I got to know Plo Koon, devastating.
Yeah.
It was Hera in Rebels made me go back and watch the episodes with Boyle and Waxer where they ran into Nima. So yeah. I was like, okay, they all know each other. I got to go back and then you can catch the little girl and everything in those episodes. So that one, Hera made me go back and watch Clone Wars again.
For me, it's definitely, like, Twilight of the Apprentice and the season finale of Rebels. Like, Twilight of the Apprentice, I looked at Vader, like, in a whole new light, and I, like, realized, like, I'm sure I'm not the only one who was hoping that during that fight, Vader would say, go, leave, I'll let you live, but if we see each other again, I'll kill you. Instead, he's just like, okay, I'm gonna kill you now. Which makes it so much more obvious, the fact that, like, Luke is truly the only one who's able to save Anakin. And also, like, the series finale of Rebels, and then, like, saying, like, oh, Rex was at the Battle of Endor, and then Galaxy of Adventures, like, showing the little animations and showing Rex with Han Solo, made me go rewatch Return of the Jedi again, just to, like, catch that snip bit and just say to people, ha, Rex is it in Return of the Jedi, take that.
Order 66 for me, too.
For me, it was the Lawless episode from Clone Wars. It's the one, I mean, how could they manage to fit that much plot into one 22-minute episode? Just blows my mind. There's, you know, the whole Obi-Wan and Satine arc. They're at the very end, we're close to the end, when Obi-Wan is leaving, he turns to Bo-Katan and he says, she's your sister, isn't she? I'm so sorry, which is a total, which is why made me want to watch Return of, I mean, Phantom Menace again. Oh, sorry, Revenge of the Sith, when Obi-Wan goes, Anakin's a father, isn't he? I'm so sorry. It mirrors that completely. And then the very end of that episode, when they've got, they're fighting up against this mural, which is, it's, what do you call it, Mandalore, the way the art style they chose was, what's the Spanish? Picasso. And so the mural in front of which they watch, in front of which they fight, is basically, it's very similar to Picasso's Guernica, which is from the Spanish Civil War. It's a painting of that. I would love it. I call that like Star Wars Guernica, just because I just love that painting. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. For me, it's kind of like the backwards of this question. I used to be a manager of a comic book store, and I lost count of how many dude bros told me to my face that the animation of Star Wars is not important unless it's on the movie screens. And when they dropped one day out of the blue that Saw Gerrera was going to be in a movie called Rogue One, I started sobbing because I felt validated that this animation that I loved so much was now on the movie screens, and that it was important, and that it was being brought into live action. And then we got General Syndulla. We see Chopper. We see the ghost at the Battle of Scarif. And so emotionally, because of the animation, is one of the reasons why Rogue One's my favorite movie. And I love it so much, and because it just validates my love of the animation, because it brought it to life for the first time. And then we got Solo, and everybody was confused.
Oh, that was fun.
That was the best.
I love the idea that people who have never had any exposure to the animation department after Solo, their first dive is going to be on Dathomir. And I just think that's crazy. And people are going to be like, what is going on in this show? And there's Mother Talzin, and Dooku's there, and Savat. Like, there's a lot going on in that. And for that to be your first introduction into Clone Wars, I think is really funny. What's your question?
One's just a commentary. If you've watched Resistance and the Aliens and the Part Shop, if anybody's a NPR fan, they remind me of Click and Clack, the Car Talk guys.
Yep.
So I didn't know if anybody else had drawn that parallel. But one thing I was curious about, like in the first season, they really didn't, with the exception of like Hype and Tora, they didn't really touch basis on any of the Aces, any of their stories or anything like that. And I was wondering if any of y'all had any speculations on that.
I have a lot of thoughts about that. I am just very disappointed of how they promoted Resistance. It was promoted so differently. For one, it's in a weird slot. Children are not awake on a school night at 10 p.m. What the heck is that? And if you look at the amount of like merchandise and stuff that has come out for the other shows, Clone Wars has a bajillion EU books, that has comics, that has action figures, that has stuff. Rebels has a New Dawn, Thrawn Treason, Thrawn Alliances, Kanan the Last Padawan, Hera has been in the Star Wars comics, they have all this. Resistance has had two comics. Two, and it's from IDW. And IDW is a very tiny comic book company. It's not part of the main Marvel line where it's like, hey, Resistance. I think they've just completely messed up promoting the show, because the Aces were like, look at the Aces, they're great. And I'm like, this is what I care about. They look so cool. I want to know about Griff Halloran, this person who used to be in the Empire. What does he think about the First Order? He says like two things the entire season.
Yeah.
Like, there's been a completely messed up promotion with Resistance, which I think is why a lot of people haven't jumped on board yet, because it's flying under everyone's radar. And when they released all the Rise of Skywalker books coming out within between now and the movie, I went, where's all the Resistance books? Like, heck, we have a whole thing about Zare Leonis from Rebels from one episode, has his own book series. Why can't we have,
really,
like,
book series, by the way.
A yeah. book?
Like, with Griff, like, he was the ace I was, like, most excited about. Yeah. Like, we get, like, this old TIE pilot and stuff like that, and then with the reveal that Doza was an Imperial captain, it got me, like, got my brain thinking, like, holy crap, Doza and Griff might have been at the Battle of Jakku, and Griff might have been loyal to Doza and might have gone with him and stayed by his side to help, like, protect him and stuff like that. And I was expecting towards the end, like, of season one, oh, we're gonna get, like, a flashback sequence, there might be some, like, conflict between, like, Yeager and Griff. We get nothing. We just get a scene of Griff nearly getting shot down by a First Order TIE fighter and Kaz saving him. That's it.
I'm kind of reserving my judgment for, which is, like, I totally agree about, I think it was marketed incorrectly and made you really hyped for the ace pilots when they're hardly in the show, but I do think that they will come into play perhaps even more in season two, and I want to see how that fits in, so I don't know if I have, like, a concrete thought on it yet, because they could come in a big way.
Yeah, I'm also worried because it's only basically 22 episodes, if at all, and so they got to cram a lot of stuff into those 22 episodes. Now, they've shown they can do it, but, I mean, it is literally one of the most, it is the most diverse show we've ever seen, I mean, just as far in terms of the characters are concerned. So, why, you know, and also, these cartoons take a long time to make. This decision had to have been made a year ago, a lot of the recordings were done a minimum a year ago, if not more. So why now they decide to do it, I really don't know.
If diversity is something you care about in Star Wars, 6 out of 9 of the voice actors from Resistance of the main characters are people of color. Yeah. Enjoy that thought. Go to the Star Wars rep panel tonight.
So I was wondering, how do you feel about how Palpatine is still alive?
Ooh. Amazing.
Brilliant. The poster looks like his season 4 Rebels image. Yes. Like, it looks like it came from the animation. So.
If he's sitting in front of, like, a bowl kind of thing, I'll for it, yeah.
Yeah, I'm insanely excited for Palpatine's return, and if it is revealed that the Palpatine we see in Rebels, like, through the portal is actually Palpatine in episode 9, I am going to scream. I don't care who I interrupt the movie for, I'm going to scream.
I mean, the imagery on the poster for The Rise of Skywalker is so reminiscent of Palpatine in World Between Worlds. You kind of can't not make that connection, and I think World Between Worlds, something like that, is coming up in Rise of Skywalker, and Palpatine figured out how to access that power. I'm very excited.
My real answer is, go look up Charles Soule's run of Darth Vader.
Yes.
And look up Lord Momen, and you'll understand my theory, because Lord Momen is a Sith Lord who preserves his essence in a helmet. And what do we keep seeing? Darth Vader's helmet in the trailer. That's my thought. To also read that comic's amazing.
Hi, Turret. So, throughout Rebels and Clone Wars and Resistance, there have been a lot of really funny moments. It's a kids' show. There's got to be funny moments.
Yeah.
What is your favorite funny moment from all the Disney shows?
That's a good question.
When Anakin and Ahsoka throw Rex off the tall wall.
And they keep the head count, too. And they're like, no, I won.
For me, it's got to be when Rex pretends to be a commando droid, and you got, like the Cody on the side is like, this is never gonna work, you're an idiot. The door just opens up and Rex just holds a gun, is like, hello, just blows the droid's brains out.
Yeah.
I love that scene so much.
One of my favorites is from Resistance, when Kaz has to take over Flix and Orca's shop, and he has to be like a retail worker basically for a day, and he does not do a good job. It's hilarious.
I love all the BB-8 and Kaz moments in Resistance. What BB-8, like, clearly just wants to go back to Poe, which is just so funny. And their banter, which isn't really, you know, droid banter, but it's just, they have funny chemistry. It's great.
Pretty much any time Chopper speaks.
Yes!
Love Chopper.
Chopper gets in the Y-Wing and he's just pissed.
Yes.
You know, the thing for me is just, like, anytime the space family and Rebel snarks at each other, and just because I just thought of a bunch of, like, different things at once that came to my brain. the one that came to my brain is like, oh, it's wolves, loth wolves. When it gets weird, it's a good thing. Yeah. Just like anytime they snark at each other, I love it.
That reminds me of the scene where like Hera leaves it and she's like, you're in charge, and Kallus is like, I can't believe it. I chased the ship for so long, now I'm commanding it. And Rex is like, no, you're not. I'm in command. And he's like, I've commanded Star Destroyers. And Rex is like, yeah, I think you just answered your own question just there.
Go ahead.
Mine's, again, a little bit more commentary, but I was thinking about when you guys were talking about, like, what would you be, like, the future of the animation. I was thinking about the Battle of Geonosis. I would want to see, like, what about one of the side guys, the Shiny Squad, fresh out of the box. Like, they were trying to pump out as many clones as fast as they could, and they didn't know anything that was going on. Like, they were, Anakin was asking for assistance and air support, and I forget the guy's name, Admiral, was like, we this entire world invasion. We have millions upon billions of clones. Like, just one of those clones, like, first time seeing a Geonosian, doesn't even know they can fly. In all their simulations, they only fight droids. Like, what's up with that?
Yeah, that would be an interesting point of view, is the Shiny's experience on Geonosis or any of the first deployments. Yeah,
it's also not canon, but if you want to check out Karen Travis's Clone Commandos books, they're superb. It's not canon yet anymore, but they're excellent.
With the Republic Commando game, you get like that sense of the first battle from the point of view of like the commando squads. And you also pretty much, like, if, like, you listen to, like, the comm chatter and stuff like that, you pretty much hear that, like, this battle is an abysmal failure of tactics. Like, it is so bad, and you're hearing that, like, and you're being deployed on several more missions because other squads didn't have any real command structure and got wiped out. So, yeah.
And I think this might be our last question.
Okay. Well, one, I like the Clone Wars series, you know, great storylines and whatnot, but have you heard anything about the upcoming series, animated series, that has Luke Skywalker in there? And of course, they brought back the voice actress for Ahsoka Tano. I assumed it was for the upcoming Clone Wars season, but it may be also working with the Luke Skywalker series. And I'm assuming that time period is when he's training to be a Jedi, either before he last saw Yoda, or after. And have y'all heard anything?
I haven't heard anything.
So that's probably why they pivoted on Resistance and dropped it like a hot potato, is to work on the Luke series.
The only Luke Skywalker thing I know of is the one that's on YouTube right now, the Galaxies of Adventures, and those are also awesome. If you haven't checked those out, I mean, it's some of the best animation you'll see around. It's also done by Titmouse, who is a really good animation house. So.
I haven't heard anything about a Luke Skywalker series, but if there is a Luke Skywalker series and he gets to meet Ahsoka and, like, Rex and all those characters, I'm on board.
That's one of my dreams of, like, I want to write that fan fiction one day of, like, they're at the Battle of Endor, like, it's just ended, everyone's celebrating, they just blew up the second Death Star, and Rex hears across the way somebody mention the name Skywalker, and he looks over, and there's Luke and Leia, and he goes over, and he's like, I knew your parents. Like, that's a story I want, where he sits down with Luke and Leia, and he tells them stories about Padme and Anakin. Like, I want that story.
In my headcanon, like, Luke, like when the parties are going on, Luke goes to Rex, and is like, I don't know what I should do. Like, pretty much, like, spills beans about, like, hey, Vader's my dad, and stuff like that. And in my headcanon, Rex pretty much tells Luke what Anakin was like, and pretty much just like, now go get my general back.
I have a headcanon that Ahsoka meets Luke at the end of Return of the Jedi, and she's with him as he burns Vader's body.
Oh, God!
Yeah.
Well, on that happy note.
Well, thank you so much for coming.
I like to imagine Rex and R2.
I get buttons if people want buttons.
Yes, and real fast, just down the line, if you want to put your Twitter, if you want to plug your Twitter real fast, you can find Skytalkers at SkytalkersPod on Twitter.
I have buttons and cards, so.
I have a button, and my next project is this costume, so.
I have buttons and cards for my Instagram.
Thank you all.
Make sure you rate this panel, because this panel wasn't originally on the schedule, and we had to ask to have it put into the schedule. So rate the panel, see how you like it, stuff like that.
Hello.
I have the swag.
visit our website at twotruefreaks.com. Two True Freaks is always spelled TWOTRUEFREAKS. You can email Two True Freaks directly at twotruefreaks@gmail.com. Two True Freaks and all of its excellent affiliates are available on iTunes, and you can choose to subscribe to either the entire network if you wish, or pick whichever individual shows you want to follow. We have so many shows to choose from, there's just bound to be one that appeals to your particular fandom. Just search Two True Freaks with an exclamation mark at the end, space, and the number 2. You can find Two True Freaks on Facebook. Just search for Two True Freaks. If you ever leave your house and you actually have friends, why don't you tell them about Two True Freaks? If you've enjoyed our show, please, won't you take a moment to rate us on iTunes? That helps others find the show, too. Thanks for listening. And join us every Monday for new episodes of Two True Freaks.